Hello, welcome to this week's edition of the St. Albans and District Talking Newspaper. My name is Rob Pearman, and this is the Saturn edition for the week ending October the 12th. Now, you may be as surprised to hear my voice as I am to be in the studio recording this, but we had a bit of a problem last night. That's Thursday night when the programme should have been recorded, a technical problem which has meant that it wasn't recorded. So I'm in the studio this morning, Friday morning, early, and I'm afraid that means that you're only going to hear my voice through the news. And I've got a bit of a cold, which is a bit of pain, but there we are. Best I can do in the circumstances, because we do want to get a programme out to you. There's some good news stories around in the paper this week, and we're going to run with everything that we would normally do, but possibly a little bit shorter than usual, because my voice might crack up. So I'm going to start with the news stories now. And the first story on the front page of the Hearts Advertiser this week has a photograph of the Prime Minister Johnson speaking to medical staff during his visit to Watford General Hospital this week. And the headline reads, PM fails to give support to new hospital campaign. The Prime Minister has snubbed a campaign for a new West Hearts hospital by backing plans to spend millions renovating Watford General. During a tour of Watford on Monday, Boris Johnson announced his support for plans to maximise investment in the hospital, saying it would result in, quotes, world-class facilities. West Hearts Hospitals Trust and Hearts Valley's Clinical Commissioning Group have been given a £350 million budget to spend on hospital services, the bulk of which would go towards Watford General, with some renovations at St Albans City and Hemel Hempstead. But the new hospital campaign has long maintained that a new central A&E hospital is the best option for West Hearts, and hired building consultant Robert Scott to prove that the Trust's plans are not workable. Campaigner Edie Glatter said, "It seems the Prime Minister has only listened to one side. He's not had the chance to take note of the massive opposition to the Watford scheme. There needs to be fresh thinking, public consultation, and a new hospital on a central, accessible site. Surely the Prime Minister wouldn't want to condemn the people of West Hearts to substandard, inaccessible hospital provision for generations to come, while at the same time approving the plans for Princess Alexandra Hospital in Harlow to use their funding to build a brand new state-of-the-art hospital." Fellow campaigner Andy Love has written a letter to the PM arguing that the hospital site in Vicarage Road, Watford, is unsuitable for further development. He said, quote, "Watford General Hospital is in the back streets of Watford, right next door to a Premier League football ground and built on a very steep gradient. Not the best location to be undertaking a major redevelopment of an A&E hospital over the next 5 to 10 years. The West Hearts Hospitals Trust recently received additional government funding to renovate buildings and improve mental health care at local hospitals over the next 5 years. Another party political leader in town was Lib Dem leader, and she came to St Albans last week. Headline reads, "Lib Dem leader, I am very hopeful that we will win the seat here." Liberal Democrat leader Jo Swinson warned local business owners in St Albans about the impact of Brexit on high streets. Ms Swinson visited Home Interiors and gift shop Cositas and met with its owner Emma Bustamante, as well as St Albans Lib Dem parliamentary candidate Daisy Cooper, landlord Christo Toffelli of Ye Olde Fighting Cocks, Helen Searle of Bridal Shop Ceremonia, Jim Pratt of the Robin Hood, and Donna Nicol of Chloe James Lifestyle. She said, "The lack of confidence in the economy is really having an impact on footfall and what people are willing to spend. Any Brexit is going to be bad for high streets and bad for public services." Speaking about whether she thinks the Lib Dems have a chance of defeating Anne Main in St Albans, Ms Swinson said, "Daisy Cooper is a brilliant candidate. She'll be a fantastic MP for St Albans, and I'm very hopeful that we'll win the seat here. This city is such a Remain-supporting city and has an MP who's taking the opposite line in Parliament and very much towing the Boris Johnson line. I think it's absolutely time for a fresh face as the MP for St Albans with Daisy Cooper." Ms Swinson also addressed the recent allegations against Boris Johnson regarding his relationship with businesswoman Jennifer Arcuri after he was accused of showing favouritism towards her during his time as London mayor. She said, quotes, "I think he's clearly got questions to answer, and I think it's right that these should be properly investigated. It's very serious when you're in public office, whether you're a councillor, whether you're an MP, whether you're the Mayor of London. You're not supposed to be using that power that you have improperly. And the suggestions that taxpayers' money has been allocated to particular projects after pressure from somebody in a position as Mayor of London, these things need to be decided on a fair basis. And it's very serious to suggest that that was otherwise. It needs to be thoroughly investigated, and Boris Johnson needs to answer those specific questions. Ms. Swinson also spoke in support of a people's vote, saying that people, quote, have the right to change their minds about Brexit, and that the public deserve to have a final say. Sticking with the political arena, but going now to the local council, where the headline on the page is Councillors Object to Easing Noise Restrictions at Luton Airport. St Albans District Councillors are to maintain a, quote, strong objection to proposals that would ease noise restrictions on Luton Airport, despite the submission of additional information. London Luton Airport has asked for permission to relax the controls that are currently in place, limiting the impact aircraft noise has on the ground. Current controls dictate that daytime aircraft noise should only reach levels of 57 dB on an area of ground covering 19.4 square kilometres. But the airport has asked for the noise contour to cover 23.4 square kilometres until the end of 2024. They've also asked for an extension of the nighttime noise contour to allow sound to reach 48 dB on an area covering 44.1 square kilometre instead of the current 37.2 square kilometre to the end of 2024. It is said that, quote, unprecedented, unquote, levels of growth in passenger numbers at the airport has resulted in the existing nighttime noise controls being breached, and the daytime contour area has only just remained within permitted levels. Councillors in St Albans considered the proposal, which will ultimately be determined by Luton Borough Council, in June, when they agreed to raise a strong objection. The Council's Planning Referrals Committee was asked to consider further information in respect to noise levels and modelling, mitigation measures, and of the economic impact of complying with the existing condition. According to the additional information, the revised noise modelling suggests the existing daytime noise contour will be exceeded in 2019, but not between 2020 and 2028. It also suggests that limits will be set on the types of aircraft that were allocated certain slots, that no non-emergency diversions would be accepted, and charging would be implemented from 2019 to incentivise a faster modernisation of fleets. Failure to support the variation could result in losses to the airport of between £12 and £25 million a year, and could also lead to job losses. However, the committee agreed that the council should continue to object to the proposal as part of Luton Borough Council's consultation. The objection states that, quote, any increase in noise disturbance for residents is unsatisfactory, unquote, and the number of additional homes affected is, quote, significant, unjustified and unacceptable. A switching mood completely, a hostel highlights support available to the district's homeless people. A St Albans-based homelessness charity is raising awareness of the support available to rough sleepers for World Homeless Day. The Open Door Hostel on Brickett Road has launched a film to mark World Homeless Day today, that's Thursday, 10th of October, and to showcase the work they do helping homeless people in the district. Open Door, which is run by Hightown Housing Association, offers laundry facilities, support with CV writing and job applications, help with housing inquiries, mental health counselling and more. The film urges St Albans residents who are worried about rough sleepers to consider donating to the service or volunteering their time. Councillor Jackie Taylor, portfolio holder for Housing, Inclusion and Protection for St Albans District Council, said, quote, the people of St Albans have always been extremely generous in donating money to homeless charities as well as doing voluntary work to help them out. However, the needs of rough sleepers can often be extremely complex, with a multitude of factors coming into play, which is why the holistic, tailored support offered by Open Door is so critical. The film conveys the fantastic work that goes on there, and we hope it encourages members of the public to think about how they can support homeless people in the district, particularly as we enter into the colder winter months. End of quote. Both St Albans District Council and Hightown Housing Association are also marking World Homeless Day with the launch of a new Housing First project, which is being run in conjunction with Dacorum Borough Council. The project will offer permanent, affordable housing through St Albans District Council and the Housing Association, as well as intensive support to help rough sleepers rebuild their lives. Two newly appointed Housing First coordinators, based at the Open Door Hostel, will work with participants to help access services. Councillor Taylor added, "Unlike other homelessness intervention models, Housing First places no preconditions on people, only a willingness to maintain their tenancy. The approach has proved to be very successful in other parts of the UK in helping people break the cycle of instability that can keep them on the streets." And now switching to another community action, an old bus has been converted into a community hub for the deaf. Pupils from a school for the deaf have turned a bus into a cafe and meeting place for the community. A group of students from Heathlands School in St Albans has launched a new centre to spread awareness about the deaf community and to provide a place where they can meet. They celebrated the project, which was completed by parents and students, to turn the bus into a multi-purpose room and cafe. Co-head teacher Sarah Shield said the bus will allow pupils to develop life skills and to facilitate inclusion activities. She explained that staff will be able to run workshops for families or transport staff. Some parents of pupils travel a long way to get to the school for pick-up and will now be able to relax while they wait for their children to finish. St Albans Mayor Janet Smith attended the launch alongside Jamie Clark, the captain of both England and Great Britain deaf football teams. The project was supported by the Heathlands School Parent Teacher Association, St Albans Lions Club, the Brewer Dance Academy, and a grant from the National Deaf Children's Society. Sarah Brinsden, teacher and project coordinator at Heathlands School, said, "I feel so proud of what's been achieved and hope the space can be put to good use straight away." The Lions, who supported the project, exclaimed how pleased they were to support such an innovative project. Kerry Ross of the National Deaf Children's Society said, "We were delighted when Heathlands School told us all about this project, and so proud to help play a part in getting it off the ground. On behalf of the National Deaf Children's Society, I want to congratulate the students and teachers at Heathlands for all their hard work. I have no doubt the bus will become a very valuable asset to the deaf community." Heathlands School is a nursery, primary and secondary school for deaf children, which provides day and residential provision. A couple of stories now about the cathedral. The first is about medieval wall paintings that are being brought to life. Medieval wall paintings from the 13th to 16th centuries have been recreated as part of guided tours at St Albans Cathedral using 21st century technology. Light projections depicting the paintings are going to be emblazoned on the south-facing walls of the nave this autumn to recreate where they stood during medieval times. The paintings were reconstructed as part of the cathedral's redevelopment project known as Alban, Britain's First Saint, which is being funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. Professor Michael A. Michael of the University of Glasgow and Craig Williams, Head of Illustration in the Britain, Europe and Prehistory Department at the British Museum, worked on the project alongside the Chair of St Albans Cathedral Guides, Julia Lowe. They focused on the four largest images of saints in the nave to digitally reconstruct, which depicts St Christopher carrying Jesus across a river, former Archbishop of Canterbury Thomas Becket, St Citha of Lucca, and a narrative scene from the story of Saints Alban and Amphibolus. Professor Michael said the Illuminations project is an example for other churches with fragmentary, damaged and vandalised wall paintings of how they can be brought to life again. While the damage to the paintings was significant, enough of the outlines remain to attempt to reconstruct them using archaeological techniques. The experts were able to build up the paintings' histories from scratches and cross-hatching, indicating where they were defaced in the 1500s. And they were able to identify what colours were used and the finer features of the saints' faces. After producing line drawings, the pictures were then recoloured using reference colours from within the cathedral itself, as well as historical documents, to create a series of clear, bright images which are reminiscent of the originals. The Very Reverend Dr. Geoffrey John, Dean of St Albans Cathedral, said, "We've long wanted to lift the veil of time to see how the paintings might have appeared. And thanks to the generosity of the National Lottery Heritage Fund, we've been able to do this. And seeing them helps us to understand why pilgrims of the Middle Ages are said to have fallen to their knees in wonder. And the other story about the cathedral is also about illumination, but slightly different. The cathedral will be illuminated for Baby Loss Awareness Week. St. Albans Cathedral is lighting up its west end facade in pink and blue to raise awareness of pregnancy and baby loss during Baby Loss Awareness Week. The annual Awareness Week, now in its 17th year, is an opportunity for bereaved parents, families and friends to commemorate babies' lives and break the silence around pregnancy and baby loss in the UK. The lighting up of the West End will take place every evening during Baby Loss Awareness Week, which has been running from October the 9th through till October the 15th. Cathedral Subdean Abby Thompson said, "For the past few years, the cathedral has lit up at night in pink and blue in support of Baby Loss Awareness Week. We hope the lights are a reminder to people who've suffered such a terrible loss that there are friends and supporters all around. Prayers will be said at Evensong throughout the week, and anybody who'd like to come to the cathedral to light a candle in memory of a lost child is most warmly welcome. You're also welcome to request a meeting with one of our clergy team for prayer and conversation, if this will be helpful." Claire Harmer, Chief Executive of Stillbirth and Neonatal Death Charity, known as SANDS, said, "Baby Loss Awareness Week is a unique opportunity for parents to commemorate their babies who died, and I hope St Albans Cathedral will help bereaved families in St Albans feel less isolated and alone in their grief. Pregnancy loss or the death of a baby is a tragedy that affects thousands of people every year. It's devastating for parents and families, and it's vital they get the bereavement support and care they need for as long as they need it." A Wave of Light event is also taking place at Gaybridge Park in Hemel Hempstead at 6:30pm on October the 15th. That's International Pregnancy and Infant Loss Remembrance Day. Families are invited there to light a candle or lantern and walk from the memorial to the Baby Memorial Garden for selected readings, poems and a time of personal reflection. The garden was created by Hemel and St Albans Stillbirth and Neonatal Death Society in partnership with Dacorum Borough Council and opened in 2004. And a final long story, a chip shop story goes on. The owners of a St Albans chip shop are still recovering in the wake of a devastating fire which tore through their business in the summer. A blaze broke out in the kitchen of the popular Camp Road Fish and Chip Shop on Sutton Road at 8:24pm on Saturday, July the 13th, causing a huge amount of damage to the shop and residential flat above. Martin and Cynthia Chen have since set up a new chip shop on Vesta Avenue while they continue to battle with their insurance company over their business payout. There were already plans in place to open another restaurant before the fire, but the Camp Road blaze forced them to relocate to the other site immediately. Cynthia Chen said that the family are having to live with their uncle at the moment, which is further away from her children's school. She said, "There's a lot of damage to our home. It's all smoky and wet from the rain. We can't live there. There are two big holes in the ceiling in the two boys' rooms." She added that the insurance company has agreed to pay for the property side of the insurance, but not the business part. But the Chen said they're hoping to move back into Camp Road in about 6 months' time. The local community has been very supportive, with many customers and neighbours expressing concern for the progress of the family since the fire. A crowdfunding page was set up by a member of the Fleetville community to offer a gift to help the Chens through this difficult period. The Just Giving page received many kind comments from well-wishers, including, "I've been using the shop for 36 years and the sooner it's all back, the better. Well done for organising the support." Another said, "Best of luck getting your lives back on track. Can't wait till you're serving your amazing fish and chips again." The page raised £1,739 from 62 supporters, but the Chens asked for the page to be closed down early. Cynthia said, "We feel so proud to be part of the camp community. We'll definitely do something to thank them when we reopen." Just a few short news items, one in St Albans. It's called Older People's Day. Older residents can take part in activities, gain useful information and make new friends at St Albans Older People's Day. The annual event, named Flourishing Lives, will be held at the Alban Arena on Wednesday, October the 16th, and is sponsored by the National Care Line and organised by St Albans District Council. Police, the fire service and the council's community safety team will offer support and advice, and representatives from local clubs and societies will give demonstrations and taster sessions. Visitors will also be able to meet therapy dogs from Rapport and take away free bulbs from the green stand, and council officers will be on hand to explain recycling, housing and benefits. Pupils from Fleetville Junior School and Loretto College have volunteered to help serve free refreshments, and there'll be music and entertainment from King of Hearts Barbershop Chorus and the U3A Ukulele Band. Just to let you know that St Albans and District Talking Newspaper will be having a stand as usual at this Older People's Day in the Auburn Arena on October the 16th, and it runs from about 10 till about 1:30. It's not all day, it's really either side of lunch, if you like, a very long lunch. Also, on the day before that, in Harpenden, the annual Harpenden Seniors Forum Fair will be held, and it's very similar to the Older People's Day in St Albans, and it's been going for many years. We at the Talking Newspaper have been present there, and I shall be there again this next time, which is on October the 15th, that's Monday coming. And again, it starts at about 10 o'clock, 10:30, and runs through till 1:30. So maybe see you there or in St Albans. Well, that's as many stories as I can manage on my own, I'm afraid. My voice is beginning to go, but I want to get to the radio listings. In other words, suggestions that you might be interested in some of the radio programmes covered in the upcoming report, starting with Saturday, October the 12th, when the afternoon drama on Radio 4 is The Republicans. It's part one of three episodes following the political swings of the Republican Party in the United States through the personal stories of its presidents. Written by Jonathan Myerson, the play is set in 1987 when President Reagan's second term in office is on the ropes as Congress investigates the Iran-Contra arms-selling deal. Hanging by Our Thumbs is part one of The Republicans, and it starts at 2:30 on Radio 4 on Saturday, October the 12th. Later on Radio 4 that day, Hannah Maudsley asks if anniversaries distort our view of the past or shape our vision of the future. It's an interesting question in light of the number of programmes on radio and TV that are pegged to an anniversary, and the number of books that are published to mark the passing of a particular event or person. So, what power do anniversaries have, and what impact does our apparent obsession with anniversaries have on the way we understand the past? Hannah Maudsley investigates in Archive on 4, Our Anniversary Obsession, on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. on Saturday. On Sunday, October the 13th, Sheila Dillon, presenter of the food programme on Radio 4, visits the home of Joe Wicks. Who's he, you may well ask? Well, he's a personal trainer who started making Instagram videos in his kitchen in 2014. He couldn't have imagined back then that he'd become the author of the second biggest UK selling cookbook of all time. So if you want to find out what made his cooking such a hit with everyone on Instagram and all those who bought his best-selling book, you'll need to tune into the food programme at 12:30 p.m. on Radio 4 on Sunday. A radio journey follows a bit later at 1:30 on Radio 4. Red C. Bernard takes us on a journey of a lifetime as she recreates the trip her mother took in 1968 through the Ethiopian mountains to the holy city of Lalibela, often referred to as the Eighth Wonder of the World. Her journey begins in Addis Ababa, where her parents met. Her destination is a complex of Ethiopian Orthodox churches, all hewn out of a single piece of rock below ground level. Journey of a Lifetime is on Radio 4 at 1:30 p.m. on Sunday. Then at 7:15, writer and comedian Sophie Hagen tells us how to love your fat. Now, she should know because she's written a book called Happy Fat, and here she sets out a funny and impassioned agenda for moving beyond the current, often negative attitudes to fat. She's not ignoring the obesity epidemic, but she wants to avoid causing widespread misery and mental illness through poisonous messages about weight and size. How to Love Your Fat is on Radio 4 starting at 7:15 on Sunday evening. Now to a selection of programmes which are broadcast through from Monday to Friday at the same time each day. The book of the week on Radio 4 each day at 9:45 a.m. and repeated at 12:30 a.m. is Me, the autobiography of Elton John. The book has been ghostwritten by the Guardian rock and pop critic Alexis Petridis, and for Radio 4 it's read by Taron Egerton, who played Elton John in the recent biopic Rocket Man. And if you'd like to hear the man himself, then tune in to Ken Bruce on Radio 2 from 9:30 a.m. each day, because Elton John is the Tracks of the Year guest all week, as he picks 10 of his all-time favourite tracks, starting on Monday with Elvis Presley and Jerry Lee Lewis. The mid-morning drama this week is Edna O'Brien's The Country Girls, The Lonely Girl. This is the second part of her frank, funny and subversive trilogy, which was banned by the Irish Censorship Board when it was first published in 1962. Well worth a listen each day at 10:45 a.m. or in the evening at 7:45 on Radio 4. At midday and in the book at bedtime slot this week at 10:45 p.m, it's the continuing story by Jessie Burton, The Confession. This is the follow-up novel to Jessie Burton's successful 2014 debut, The Miniaturist. And the composer of the week over on Radio 3 each day at noon is Muzio Clementi. He was a contemporary of Haydn, Mozart and Beethoven, but was in competition with them, and as a result his music is known to relatively few people. Donald MacLeod reassesses the legacy of Clementi, the man known as the father of the piano, in Composer of the Week on Radio 3 each day from noon. Other radio highlights this week include on Monday, October the 14th, Russell Cain's Right to Buy. The comedian traces the roots of his success back to the day his father bought their council house in Enfield during the 1980s. The Right to Buy inspired Russell Cain to achieve greater things, despite being ostracised by the neighbours. But he shares his unease about a policy that in the long run led to a housing headache and the sense of a drawbridge being pulled up behind him. Russell Cain's Right to Buy is on Radio 4 on Monday at 11 a.m. On Wednesday, October the 16th, Only Artists on Radio 4 finds the Manchester poet Tony Walsh and the Accrington-born actress Julie Hesmondhaig in conversation. They bond over their shared geographical and class backgrounds and talk frankly about the importance of offering those born without privilege the opportunity and inspiration to achieve. By very different routes, they both reached the top of their trees, but they haven't forgotten what it took to reach that point. Only Artists is on Radio 4 on Wednesday at 9 a.m. and again in the evening at 9:30 p.m. Over on Radio 2 on Wednesday evening, it's the 20th year of the Radio 2 Folk Awards. The Yorkshire-based duo O'Hooley and Tido, they wrote and performed the theme tune to the TV drama Gentleman Jack. They will perform along with the Welsh-Senegalese pairing of Catherine Finch and Sekou Keita. The gongs will be handed out at the Bridgewater Hall in Manchester from 7:30 p.m. on Radio 2. And finally, on Friday, October the 18th, the start of a new comedy series, penned by the popular writer Sue Lim, who created the series Gloomsbury, which you may have heard. This time round, Skeletons in the Cupboard finds two 60-something sisters, played by Alison Steadman and Morwenna Banks, trying to clear out their mother's house after her death. Their musings are interrupted by a mild-mannered stranger who wheedles his way into their lives. Skeletons in the Cupboard starts on Radio 4 on Friday at 11:30 a.m.